to Authors on the Air. I'm Pam Stack, your host. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Today is Wednesday, Superstar Wednesday. It is my second show of the day. And let me tell you something. I'm thrilled for my guest. Several years ago, the first time I went to a Thriller Fest, I met John Gilstrap. I had read his books, but then after I met him, I thought, this is a guy I got to follow. He's funny. He's smart. He's a weapons expert. He knows the stuff that he's talking about. And to me, that combination of very talented writer and all those other assets combined to make his books thrilling and exciting. His lead character, Jonathan Graves, is a private operator who retrieves people who are taken against their will, and he calls them his precious cargo. John's new book is called Scorpion Strike, about Jonathan Graves and his occasional girlfriend, Gail Bonneville. We're going to learn more about this book and more about John Gilstrap right now. John, welcome back to Authors on the Air. I am thrilled to have you here.
I can't think of any place I'd rather be. It's always a pleasure.
Congratulations on launch yesterday.
How about that? I think this is my 18th book, and launch day is always exciting. It's like Christmas morning exciting.
You know, I bet you I get your book before you do when they send them to you in that big box, you know, for you to give out. So I'm already emailing you saying, okay, I've read it. Let's plan an interview here. Let's plan a conversation. We've been doing this for about, 5 years now, right?
I think. It feels about right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I love the new Scorpion Strike book because, as is with your usual excellent writing chops, a great storyline and smartassness that only another smartassness person can appreciate. Digger and gunslinger and boxers and mother are all back and a really terrific, terrific story. For those of you who don't know, Jonathan Graves is also known as the Scorpion. He is the lead character in almost all of John's books. Gunslinger is his sometimes and now girlfriend, Gail Bonneville. Boxers is his sidekick, the 7 foot tall. He's from Holland. Is that right? Is that where Boxer's from?
Well, his heritage is Dutch. Yes. But he's Dutch. Lethal. He's big and he's lethal.
At 7 foot, of course he is. Mother is the hacker extraordinaire, computer wizard, better than anybody else on earth. Venice, whose name is actually spelled like Venice, but she'd get very ticked off at you if you pronounce it like that. John's humor shows up in all of his books just by his characters, nicknames, and names alone. Every single time I see you, and sometimes it's twice a year when I see you and see you when I interview you, I ask you how to pronounce Boxer's name, and I never can remember it, so I'm going to nail it down this time. I want you to tell me his first name.
Brian.
And then he has this most unusual last name that I swear, John, I'm going to consider it a failure of you if I don't learn how to say it. Say the name first and then break it down for me.
Vandemulebrocky.
Vandemulebrocky.
Right.
I'm writing it down just like that. So
I'll tell you, there's an interesting story. There's an interesting story behind that name. When I wrote No Mercy, which was the first book in the series, you just kind of make it up names as you go. At least that's how I do it. And when I was in the fire service, I was in the fire service 15 years, and the very first person I met, the very first firefighter I met in that journey was a guy named Brian Vandemulebrocky. And if you've ever seen, these are old school, this is the three-quarter boots and the longer coats as opposed to what the bunker gear looks like now. And you always had your name along the back of your coat. So mine would have Gilstrap, right? It was, 7 letters if I do the math on the fly?
Sure.
And it would take up, you could see it. Well, Brian's last name would start at his knee and then would wrap all the way around the coat to the other knee because there was so many letters.
Oh, that's too funny.
So finally, we changed his name to Van. So he was Brian Van, and the back of his coat finally just said Van. So,
does he know that he is a character in your series?
I haven't seen Brian in 30 years.
Jeez.
So I have no idea.
Wow.
And he is not, not that guy. He's not 7 feet tall. And, you know, it's just the name.
It's just the name stuck with you.
Right.
You know, I don't know if we ever talked about this before, but I'm not even sure where the Scorpion series began or what was your motivation for writing this story. Do you even recall that far back, John?
Oh, sure.
This is what, 15 Jonathan books or 14? I can't even remember now. I know I've read
I just signed a contract for numbers 12, 13, and 14. So this Scorpion Strike is the 11th, unless you count Soft Targets, which was an ebook-only novella, which they don't count in the 11. But where it came from, I did a nonfiction book, came out in 2006, called 6 Minutes to Freedom. And it's about a Delta Force operation in Panama at the beginning of the invasion of Panama in 1989. And the research for that book took me to very, very interesting places, but I got exposure to the Special Forces community, the super elite, you know, the D-Boys, Delta Force guys and SEALs and what have you. Extraordinary access. And I learned a lot, and when the nonfiction book came out, what do you do with all that research? So I thought, you know, how cool would it be to take the ethos of the super elite unit and apply it to civilian issues? You know, these are folks who, I'll be honest with you, the real elite special forces guys are not the loud snake eating kind of guys that you think they're going to be. They're actually, I found them to be gentle and gentlemen, clearly capable of extraordinary violence, but only by way of achieving their mission. So with all this in the background, I thought, you know, what a cool idea for a character. And after I created No Mercy, I realized, God, there's just so much potential here. I mean, Jonathan Grave, he's not only a freelance hostage rescue specialist, he's wealthy. His dad is a career criminal. And Jonathan has a lot of money he's trying to give away, but he's the benefactor of Resurrection House, which is a residential home for the children of incarcerated parents. And he does, his best friend is a priest. And you know, there's just a lot of tendrils in this story. And as I wrote it, I thought, this can be a series. And my publisher agreed.
Well, and I wholeheartedly agree because, as I've told you many times, it is my favorite series to read. When I get your emails or your newsletters and just look at what's going on in publishing world and I see there's a new John Gilstrap book out, I'm all over it like white on rice because they're fun to read, not easy to figure out. I'm always questioning the bad dude's motivation and what's going on. And it's always, you know, kind of wrapped up in a couple different layers. So it's kind of like peeling the onion till you get down to the core of it. I'll tell you what I liked about this book. And I'm going to have listeners, I'm going to have John tell you a little bit about the story first. So give us the elevator pitch, because then I want to talk about a couple things that I found really interesting and different in this book.
Okay. Well, Jonathan Grave and Gail Bonneville. Gail was she was the antagonist in the first book. She was a cop who was trying to trace down Jonathan because she saw him as a murderer as opposed to, you know, a rescuer. And ultimately, over the course of these books, she became part of the team. And a few books ago, she was very severely injured and disappeared from a couple of books, and I brought her back. And they've always had this sort of on-again, off-again relationship. She's a former FBI agent, and she's a lawyer, and some of the stuff Jonathan does comes really close to breaking the law. and she's not comfortable with it. So, you know, their romantic relationship is always been rocky. So they take this trip out to the Crystal Sands Resort, which is a fictional resort off the coast of Mexico. And the idea is to heal and sort of get to know each other again and just have a romantic getaway. And while they're there, a group of terrorists invade the island and take all of the guests, or attempt to take all of the guests hostages. And, of course, Jonathan is not armed. He doesn't have his normal tools. He doesn't have boxers with him. It's just the two of them. But it's he's the wrong one to try to take hostage. And so he and Gail get away, but it's an island. Where are they going to go? So the story is about how do they survive, and at the same time, how do they help the other hostages who, I mean, these are bad dudes who have taken them. They don't hesitate to kill. And meanwhile, when Boxers finds out about it out in the, back in the United States, as he says, I'll assemble my own damn army. And so
that's right.
It's his effort to come out and rescue him. So that's the book.
So here are a couple things. When I started reading Scorpion Strike, and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be one of those books where, Jonathan and Gail get lovey-dovey and everything's great and, you know, maybe somebody's going to try to retaliate against him. But no, you're in the first chapter and boom, boom, out go the lights. Things are happening. People are dying. And Jonathan and Gail, who obviously have not used their real names, and that makes sense, figure out really quickly because they're both super smart, something's going on. The thing that really tickled me about this is a few of what I thought were only going to be ancillary characters. The young kid who kind of sneaks out,
uh-huh.
leaves his wannabe girlfriend in the hands of the hostages, meets up with his buddy. The other people who escape and who are so suspicious and do not meet the best of ends. The interesting thing, John, and what I love about your storytelling is you're not afraid to shock your reader with what is happening to the characters. You're just not afraid to do it. If it's bringing one of your main characters close to death or losing them, or ancillary characters that we have some empathy for and we feel something for. Are those scenes difficult for you to write?
How do I do that giving away? There's one of them. You can probably guess which one it is towards the mm-hmm. end of the book that was difficult to write because the character had been along for a number of rides. And, anytime... This is the weird thing about what I do. Writing, I write from a very close third-person point of view, not to go all writer class on you, but so characterizing the characters, writing the characters, to me, is a lot like method acting. So not that I've ever been an actor, but as I understand it to be, you climb into their heads and you see the world from their point of view, and in the case of the couple they hook up with in those first moments, where it doesn't end well for them, you've got the husband's just trying to be not a wuss, in front of his wife, and he's terrified, and he's at the same time he's obnoxious, and here you got these, Jonathan and Gail, they don't know them from Adam, they just killed some people, and because they killed the terrorists, now the terrorists really want to kill them, so wouldn't you be angry at this Jonathan Grave guy who's actually rescuing you, but now has made you a wanted person because he killed the folks.
Who's also going by a code name, by the way.
Yes, exactly. And my real name is Scorpio.
Yeah, that sounds real legitimate, and I want to hang with these people, right?
Right. So it's always jarring, I think, to bring a character that actually has a name and a face to me and a personality, to bring them to a tough end. But that's really kind of the reality of violence, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
It can't just be the bad guys who suffer.
You're right. For it to be more realistic, there has to be some innocent bloodshed as well. And in this book, there is, and in some horrific ways, and it's horrible. It's terrifying, as a matter of fact. I will never go to Jamaica again. Thank you very much, John.
well,
without
I'll tell you,
boxers,
the origin,
anyway.
The origin of this story, my wife and I went to the Bahia Beach, St. Rita's Bahia Beach Resort in Puerto Rico. Maybe I shouldn't say the name.
Yep.
It is not the one it's not a surrogate
it's totally
for
different.
The place in the book. It's, you're right,
Puerto Rico is absolutely exceptional, by the way, for everybody.
Yes.
Once they totally recover, that it is an exceptional
yes.
place. I've been there many times, right.
So this was an anniversary trip, and it was a big anniversary, and we were sitting around, and it was gorgeous. Everything about the place was gorgeous. And as I'm sitting there, I thought, damn, this is a soft target. You know, everybody's half naked.
Only
there are,
you.
There's no security that I can see, right? So anybody who wanted to storm the beach could do it. Now, Puerto Rico, obviously there are some severe repercussions that being a U.S. territory, but suppose it wasn't a
right.
U.S. territory.
Right.
And so as we're sitting there, I'm telling Joy, my wife, and I said, you know, this could be. And so imagine the bad guys are coming through this door, and she said, good God, John, can't you just relax?
Right. Can't you turn it off, bud? I could just hear her saying that, too. You know, I like the fact that the island itself, it's said in the book, is not really claimed by anyone. So are there, in fact, islands like that, John?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. The conceit within the novel is, and there actually is an island in that spot in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's not what I purport it to be. In this case,
right.
it was an unowned or multiple countries wanted access to it, but it was largely ignored. And then that allowed nefarious people to do nefarious things a
sure.
la the Cold War. It became a staging ground for Cold War missiles. And so when I got this idea, I thought, well, how do I make this believable? So I did the research and found out that there's only, I think it's four countries that don't have any standing army. And one of them is Costa Rica. And I thought, okay, so I will make it a protectorate of or part of Costa Rica, which means with all this terrorist activity that's going on, there is nobody to rescue them. So therefore, Boxers and his team, or it makes sense for them to go, as opposed to
sure.
us sending the hostage rescue team or something like that. So,
it
but I don't
a,
know if such
a,
places exist.
It was a splendid plot device, I have to tell you. I really enjoyed it a lot. I want to talk about some other things that you do, John, because those people who know you and love your books are going to love this one just as much as anything else. But you are also a prolific presenter and educator on a lot of topics. But one that really stands out for me is a program that you do called Dare to Dream.
Mm-hmm.
Will you talk a little bit about that, please?
Sure. What I do for a living, and kind of, well, I shouldn't presume, but you know, you do broadcasting stuff, right? And you do
right.
Anything that falls into the arts, something that is not technical or doesn't build a building or whatever, is often held in poor esteem by others. You know, it's you talk to the average parent whose kid wants to become an actor or a writer, and you're not going to find this, oh, I'm so proud and I'm pleased. What you're going to hear all
right.
these reasons of how they're doomed to failure. And what
doomed
happens
to starvation and poverty. Right.
Right.
You're right.
Right. And certainly you're never going to be successful, because who could possibly? I mean, really, what I have been so fortunate, and yes, I have found success as a writer, but the statistics say that it's not possible. So what the Dare to Dream speech is, and it's all autobiographical about, you know, some of the stuff I went through. It's easy to look back now, you know, after 20-odd years in the business and 18 books and a certain level of success, and you say, wow, that was a fun ride. But there are certain periods during that ride that were anything but fun, and it's so easy to give up. So in Dare to Dream, that's the theme. You know, it's dare not just to dream, but to pursue the dreams. You don't have to pursue it full time. I mean, you have to pay your bills. You got to raise your kids. You know, but that doesn't mean you have to abandon the dream. And it takes courage to abandon the dream to follow the dream, because that means that you say that you're going to do these things, the odds are stacked against you, and they really are. And when you dare to dream, you're also daring to fail. And with that comes that horrible moment with friends and families and detractors and who say, "I told you so." And there's nothing that crushes a spirit quite so often.
Quite as much as "I told you so." Yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of it's a keynote speech that I give fairly frequently, and it really comes from the heart.
You know, you talk about failure, but failure, especially in the creative arts, is really a good teacher, though, isn't it?
Well, you know, failure exists until you declare it to be so. You know, I like
right.
to say that failure cannot be inflicted. It has to be declared. So
right.
other people can say, well, you know, you didn't get the part, you didn't sell the book, you didn't, you know, your symphony wasn't played, you know, they didn't re-up your musical, whatever the case may be. So not everything is a victory, but it's only failure when you give up. And
when you're when you feel defeated, then it's a failure.
Well, when you feel defeated and you stop trying, now
trying,
you've declared
right.
you have locked in failure. Not that,
yeah.
you know, not that there's shame in that. There's no shame in failure, but it's your choice to fail.
You know, this profession that is yours now, 100%, is not an easy profession. And I hear so many people say, "I really want to write a book, but it ain't that easy. And I think I have great story ideas, but I'm, you know, how do you compete when Amazon throws up 1 million books on its site every year?" I don't know. How do you compete, John? How do you write because writing is in you and it has to come out? Do you write because you have a story to tell that you think other people will enjoy? Do you write because it can be profitable? Not always, but it can be profitable. Or is it a combination of all those things?
It depends on, at this point in my career, obviously, I love what I do. You know, you can't write a story well if you don't enjoy what you're doing. The reader will be the first one to see it. So push that out of the way. But now, you know, I've been with Kensington Publishing for 11, 12 books, something like maybe 13 books. And I just signed a contract to do 3 more. So I'm part of a business now. I've signed these contracts. They depend on me. They
right.
budget for me, they pay me well, and I have to deliver. And I have to deliver even on those days when I'm not feeling all that well, because if that's what I would do if I were doing anything else for a living, right?
Sure.
Firefighters and police officers and folks overseas in the military, they don't always feel 100% when they're going out and doing their job. So I do my job too.
You recognize writing as your small business, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Are you still loving every minute of it, John? Or are you saying, okay, now this is a job like any other? Or do you say, oh, my God, this is a job unlike any other?
Oh, wow. That's I like that, those last two. It's what I do, and I love what I do. I don't think they're mutually exclusive to say that, do I do it because I love it or do it because it's my job? I have a job that I love, and I've had jobs that I don't love, and I meet so many people. I was down last week, the week before last. Had nothing to do with the current news cycle or anything else. It just a plan weeks beforehand. I went down and spent a week with the Customs and Border Protection down in El Paso,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
because I wanted to learn about tracking. and mm-hmm. they're the ones who do that. And, you know, you talk to these folks, and I'm there, I'm the VIP, I'm getting the tour, and I get to go and play with stuff and all that. You know, these guys are wearing body armor in 114-degree heat, and they do this all day, every day, and their morale is through the roof. They love what they do, but they're in danger every month. In fact, one of them was shot during the time I was there. He's okay. That's thank heavens for body armor. But, you know, they have a really dangerous job and a very uncomfortable job, and they love theirs too.
Yeah, I worked for police departments as victim advocate, and, you know, even though it was dangerous, they loved it. They wanted to serve, and so I understand that. I understand that. Let's talk about John Gilstrap, writer. What's next? You said you are writing the next book. Will it be another Scorpion book?
It'll be another Jonathan Gray book. Yes, this one is called Total Mayhem. And
I love it.
Yeah.
You have the best titles. You know, you have the best titles for your books, I have to say. Do you name your books, or does your editor help?
Oh, my editor runs that part of the show. Something people don't really realize, the author, maybe some authors do, but I've never had, in my contract, I do not have control of the title, nor do I have control of the cover. So I propose titles, but, you know, sometimes, like Kensington puts out 600 books a year, I think, and and two-word title is what works, you know, just because that's what data shows. So some of the time what I'll put out is something they've already done or that somebody else just did or will be, you know, that kind of stuff. So the titles are pretty much done by the publishing house. I get a veto. I can say no, I don't like that. But
I think they're all terrific, and I like this cover an awful lot too. It stands out really well. Yeah, it is just a really good cover. I'm so glad that you're writing another one, and I'm also glad that I don't know about in three weeks, I guess we'll be sipping cocktails with Rev in the bar, won't we?
We're going to be at Thriller Fest. That's right.
By the way,
for listeners who might be in the New York area during, what is it, the 15th? It's that
12th through the 15th, yeah.
12th through the 15th, Thriller Fest is held at the Grand Hyatt in New York, and any thriller writer you can think of is going to be there.
Yep.
As is George R.R. Martin. He's the guest of honor, so
right.
That's going to be pretty cool.
It's going to be very cool. Yes, it's held at the Hyatt Grand Central. The conference actually starts on, interestingly enough, Friday the 13th and runs through the morning of Sunday the 15th. Most of us who know this conference will all gather up on Thursday. And if you want to meet a writer at a conference, just go to a bar. Even though the Hyatt bar is very small, we all managed to find each other and have a good time. And I hope that you will look for John Gilstrap and one of John's best friends, Revis Wortham, who's going to be on the show. He was going to be on last week. He had to pull out because of a family emergency. And his other best friend, Jeffrey Deaver. It's always a party when these guys are around. I'm looking forward to seeing you. Maybe this time, you, Jeff, and Rev and I can get together in a quiet room and do a broadcast, you think?
I think that would be great. I was so disappointed. We tried that once before, and it was so much background noise, you couldn't pull it off.
I know. Well, that was, you know, and there you go. But I do know at the Hyatt, we have private rooms there for me to go into, offices and everything. Let's do that, shall we?
I think it'd be great.
Tell everybody where we can find you on the webs.
Oh, my goodness. You can find me at johngilstrap.com. My Twitter handle is at johngilstrap. On Facebook, I'm John Gilstrap Author. Oh, and let me plug one more thing. I've started a YouTube channel called A Writer's View of Writing and Publishing, and it is author John Gilstrap on YouTube. There are about 21, 22 videos up there, little snippets on kind of a behind-the-scenes peek on the publishing industry, you know, what do editors do, what do agents do, what is a writer's day like, that kind of thing.
And they're, by the way, They're fun. I've watched John's videos, and they're a lot of fun. While you're in YouTube, go see John Gilstrap and go see us at Authors on the Air. All the different shows in the network are there. And go and see John Gilstrap and hear about Jonathan Graves in person sometime and ask for a challenge coin. I have one. Which is on my bookcase in a special little box so nobody takes it. John Gilstrap, you know, my friend, I love talking to you, and I can't wait to see you next month. And thank you very much for being on my show again. You know I always want you here. And by the way, who do you want to interview?
Who would I want to interview? George R.
Yeah.
R. Martin? Yeah.
You and
yeah,
me both.
I think that would be... Well, first of all, when is the next book? Damn it. When is the next book?
Okay, his next book isn't until the end of the year, by the way, just
so
you know. Yes, I did check that out. Why wouldn't I? If I get the time with him, I'm hunting you down, and you're going to come with me, okay?
That sounds outstanding.
We might have to corner him someplace and ply
well,
him
I'm,
with
I'm certainly alcohol. Thinking selfie, and I'm going to send it to my son.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking selfie too. So, although my arms aren't long enough, so somehow we're going to make it work, right?
Right.
So, John Gilstrap, author extraordinaire, award-winning author, best-selling author. This book is called Scorpion Strike. Get it, my friends. You're going to love it. John, my best to Joy. I look forward to seeing you next month. And thanks for being with me today.
It's always terrific. Can't wait to see you.
Thanks, John. Have a good evening.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that's part two of Superstar Wednesday. I'll be back at 7:30 Eastern with Nathan Singer, another great artist. Thanks so much for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad.